The Monsters of the Midday Podcast.
Hey guys, Dusty Dvorak here for my friends at Alcomm Security Systems. Check them out at alcommsecurity.com or call 405-732-9000 for a free consultation and estimate. Alcomm Security, tell them Dusty sent you.
It is the Monsters of the Midday on a Tuesday. We said goodbye to Mark last hour. I'm with you the next 2 hours. As we are changing things up over the next several weeks, so bear with us. As we welcome in our first guest of the day from Fox Sports, the great Doug Gottlieb making his second appearance on the station today. How you doing, Doug?
I'm well, Dusty. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. I'm doing well. I'll tell you, better today than I was yesterday. Sunday and Monday, and you and I spoke yesterday, they were tough for me. I heard the great things you said about Randy with Mark earlier, and I echo everything you said, and you knew him a lot longer than I did, but what a kind and good man, at least he was to me and my family, and he's going to be really missed around Oklahoma, Doug.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like, look, obviously you and I have done the ad for him on The Animal, and I told him, you know, him and you know, the agency that we used before and recently, like, we don't actually need a script. We just talk about who Randy is, and that's it, right? And I think I recall, like, when you called me and you're like, what's the deal with this guy, when you guys first met? And I was like, nothing. He's just a great guy. Like, what do you mean? I was like, I don't know. So if you need anything, just ask him and he'll do it. And if he can't do it, he knows somebody who will. I mean, here's my favorite Randy story is I have a buddy who's like, hey, do you know anything about like land laws and lease laws? And Oklahoma's like, what? He's like, yeah, I inherited, you know, some land in, you know, southern Oklahoma, and I think it has like oil and natural gas on it. And I'm getting, you know, I'm getting these people who want to buy it or, you know, lease it or whatever. I was like, I don't know anything about it. I was like, but I do know somebody who knows everybody. And so I connected them. They talked for an hour, like three different times. And he set them up with other people, with a lawyer in Oklahoma City. And, like, he's good. And, like, again, has nothing to do with cars. He benefited nothing from it financially. He just was just, that's, you know, he's one of those connectors in life that you just, like, I can't believe how good a dude he was. So, you know, I don't know enough about any sort of backstory. I can, like you, all I can tell you is guy was a prince to me, and, you know, far kinder to me than he ever needed to be, through no real financial gain, none. I mean, I was definitely red ink on his books for a long time, no matter how many cars I bought from him. So he will be missed, and, you know, we're planning on heading back here sometime soon, and the thought of coming back and not seeing Randy is a tough one.
No doubt. No doubt. He did so many good things in the community, Youth Expo. He was in something with Coach Switzer as they try to help raise money to put scoreboards in small towns. So, I mean, just really as much as great as he was to you and I, he was like that to everybody, it seemed like.
Yeah.
And again, I know he had him. But I was around the guy a lot in the last 5 years. I never saw him have a bad day. You know what I mean? He's always had a smile on his face, and he used to always tell me to, you know, to look at things optimistically, to look at the glass half full and those different things. And as I've looked back, as I'm sure you have too, just my text history with him, looking at some of the conversations we shared and just personal things about each other, he's a good man, was a good man, and he will be missed by a lot of people. I want to pick your brain too, Doug, about some college basketball. What's up with this Kansas deal? I saw at the end of last week that the NCAA, it seems like they're really trying to come after Kansas. I don't know if it's Bill Self too, but I think that the words were egregious is what they used against Kansas. Is Kansas in any real trouble, or is the NCAA just barking with no bite?
No, I think they're in real trouble. I mean, you know, the card that they had, Kansas had, was that the courts kind of cleared them, right? Is that the courts said that they were a victim. but I don't think the NCAA is going to buy that. You know, this could end up being like the worst spring ever for Kansas basketball, where you're the favorite to win the NCAA tournament, and then you turn around and you got, I think, five major infractions levied against you. you know, look, Bill has said he's not leaving. He's not ducking any of this stuff. You know, there are tapes, and there's no concrete evidence that Bill had this Tony Gasanola guy recruiting for him. But there's enough connective tissue there where they're going to take some sort of hit for it. I just don't know how bad it'll be. And it's a major test for the NCAA, for their infractions committee, because, one, you're going to go against actual what the courts actually found. And, you know, they're not a court of law. I also think, you know, how bad do you want to hurt Kansas basketball when the sport itself is going to be in some need some financial repair after losing the NCAA tournament? There's a lot to it, but it's not a surprise. I mean, you knew it was coming. You know, just the question becomes, you know, how bad is the punishment? You know, conversely, Louisville, who was also involved, you know, Louisville only had one major infraction levied against them. Now, Louisville since has fired the coach, the athletic director, and the president. None of that has happened at Kansas, you know, because of all of this. So, yeah, to answer your question, I don't know. But this is, you know, a big part of the reason why people thought this would be a year in which if Bill Self won the national title, maybe he then goes to the NBA. He's told me, he's told everybody he's not going anywhere. But I do think these infractions are real. And, you know, the problem becomes, like, how much do you want to dig, right? Now you got a guy who was a scorned former marketing guy for Zion, mm-hmm. you know, wanting Zion to be deposed and see if he or somebody close to him will admit to taking money to go to Duke. And there's a bunch to it in college basketball in terms of not necessarily even dirty recruiting, more kind of gray area recruiting, right? Where we all know it's dirty, but it's who actually gives the money and did they give the money, you know, on the orders of the head coach. And I would say unless there's proof, unless there's tapes and there have not been any produced, they'll survive. I just don't know how bad the punishment will be before they survive.
Fascinating to see how, like you said, how the NCAA, given the crazy landscape we're in, the hit that college basketball just took with no tournament, are they really going to come after not one? Well, Kansas for sure, but the Zion thing is interesting to me as well, Doug. I mean, clearly, I mean, look, it seems as if something happened. I think we'd all be naive not to think something happened there, how Zion got to Duke. But I read all the different things that his former agency, or was it Gina Ford, I think, is essentially asking Zion to admit to. Like, why would Zion admit to any of that? And I'm just wondering if it's just something that Gina Ford, a scorned former agent of Zion, is there anything of, you know, is there anything with teeth that could actually bring Duke basketball or Coach K down?
I don't think so. I mean, again, it's going to make Nike, it's going to make Nike look bad. I think these shoe companies are going to look bad because they were, quite obviously steering kids to, to the schools that rep their brand. Everybody thought Zion was going to Clemson, which is a Nike school, but it does not have nearly the presence of a Duke, obviously. I mean, again, the big question is, what did Coach K know?
Right.
And when did he know and what did he do about it? You know? This was always the way, in the past, the way I was told that it would work was, an agent would have a runner or somebody, have somebody close to the kid, and the agent would take care of the kid and the parents and whatever, and they go to the school with the wink, wink, nod, nod. You know, after his year or 2 years that he's playing, you make sure that he, under no uncertain terms, we represent him. That was the way it always used to work. Mm-hmm. And, some of the shoe companies had gotten involved at the grassroots levels, whatever, and trying to steer kids to their programs, not with the hopes that they get them back as pros, but more so that the program would have, the best young recruits. I don't know how you can, I don't know how, if you can absolutely connect Duke to it and say Duke absolutely positively knew. And if you can't, again, I think they're going to skate on it. But it's going to be a fascinating look on how deep do you really want to dig? And you'll have people that'll say, well, they don't want to put these big programs on probation. Well, that's not true. I mean, Michigan's been on probation, UCLA and Kansas have been on probation, Duke has not. Carolina obviously skated, but that was a university-wide in the African American Studies thing. and they just kind of bled out the clock. But it did set them back substantially in terms of their ability to recruit. So, I mean, the question is, how much does this hurt Duke and Kansas? Do they keep them out of the NCAA tournament, which I just can't see them doing? I mean, I think people in Oklahoma have a healthy respect for it, but I don't know if, as sports fans, we understand what has just happened already. Forget about, we're like so concerned about college football, and rightfully so, because that's the lifeblood, not just of sports programs, but really of universities and college towns, right? Like, you take away those home football games, good luck having a hotel or a restaurant, you know, that survives an entire calendar year. But you take away the NCAA tournament, like, that's basically the potluck for athletic departments. That's where they get all their money. That's the only real fundraiser the NCAA has all year long, is the NCAA tournament. That supports it. So you're likely to see, one, budgets changing dramatically, and that's at best-case scenario. Worst-case scenario is you're going to see some of the Olympic sports go away and not come back. And that's the big question. When we get back to normalcy, one, what is the new – I mean, I guess, what's the new normal look like? How many sports programs survive, you know? And the ones that survive, are you able to keep them afloat if they're not, if they're money losers, massive money losers? Do we have conference realignment? Because, you know, as you're seeing with some of the non-conference games in college basketball, like, everybody's like, why are we flying all across the country? That's just expensive. That's a waste of money. Why don't, you know, if you're OSU, play TU and Arkansas and EULA and play Wichita and, you know, play all the
Oral Roberts.
Get on a bus. Right? You play ORU. Like, why are we getting on planes, trains, and all of, like, just get on a bus, go play a game, and come back home. Like, that, they've been operating in this, the money will never stop coming in philosophy for a long time. And trust me when I tell you, the money has stopped coming in, and no one knows how much is going to come back in once we restart.
It's all great points. And as far as college football goes, I know that you're well tied in. You talk to a lot of different people. I do too. And especially the last 3 weeks, I've been, you know, trying to talk to as many people as I possibly can and also observe and read everything that's coming out. And I don't think anything's a certainty. And anybody would say this is going to happen today on May the 12th, I would have to call into question, because I don't know if anybody knows anything is definitively going to happen. But I truly believe at this point, Doug, if they get the approval from governments and the safety is in order, I expect to see college football some form or fashion this fall.
I do too, but, you know.
There's a lot of ifs in there.
No, do they let fans in, you know? And are companies going to buy a luxury box, right? I mean, you're sitting there and you've had to furlough people. All right, I've had to furlough half my staff. You know, I've had to cut out some other people. Am I going to go pay $50,000 or $100,000 for a luxury box for a couple of games? Does that make business sense? And then when you're in university, like, look, they make a lot of money on the football, but where the real money is made is on the donations.
Sure.
Okay, so now I'm the athletic director. You know, I'm Joe C., and I go up to, you know, Gucci Row, and I'm up top, and, you know, in those beautiful luxury boxes. And I walk in, and he say, listen, you're on the hook for, what are we on the hook for this year? And they're like, hey, Joe, listen, not only did I have to fire half my staff and furlough the other half, but my own personal savings are down 40, 50%. You know, can you come back and ask me next year? Like, this, like the ramifications are so wide-reaching, and we haven't yet, we're not even to the point yet to where, you know, we can even, you know, have the thought of having fans at the games. But once you get them there, the idea of getting donations and additional money is, you know, so far from what they're thinking. Right now, everybody's just in survival mode. Can we get the lights back on? Can we get the economy back moving? And what does that even look like when it's back moving? I'm not a pessimist. I am an optimist, and I'm with you. I think they're going to play college football, and I think the social distancing worked. I still think there'll probably be a little bit of a second wave, but you know, like the human body has survived, and we got enough smart scientists. We'll figure it out on some level. But this is an economy crusher, and I don't know what it looks like when we return.
To your point, these are great points you're making. The levels that this stretches and how many things are impacted, we may not know for months ahead. Like, we may not even know yet just exactly what these ramifications are. Last question for you, Doug.
Yeah.
NBA, we got a lot of fans who are fired up about the Thunder this year. They had a great season. Season suspended. They're in the five spot. Does the NBA return this summer, or do you think that, like Shaq and Barkley are saying, how they're saying they should just end the season, do you think that's a more real possibility?
I couldn't believe
they said that, by the way, Doug. That was crazy to me.
I couldn't either. I'm really surprised. But, you know, like, look, Herbie is the voice of college football, and he said, you know, don't be surprised if you play in the spring. And I was surprised. He said it way back when.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I mean, like, okay, the Oklahoma City, the Thunder are a perfect example. If you ask those owners, right, you know, you go to the owners and you're like, all right, hey, guys, would you prefer to play or not play? What do you think their legit answer is?
I think they'd want to play.
You do?
I do, yeah.
What are the financial benefits of them playing?
Of the owners playing? Well, they're going to at least get some TV revenue coming in.
Okay, but remember, if you play, you have all your costs, and you don't. That's the only revenue that you will have.
Sure.
Right? So all the arena and all the arena staff and all your own personal staff and all the ancillary benefits you have, like, all you're doing is writing checks, and you're getting very little in return. And I believe that the TV revenue they get regardless. Now, I don't know, the lawyers are, whoever wrote the smartest contract is going to win this thing. But I Oklahoma City, they were a great story. They did a really good job. Are they going to win the championship? No. Short tournament, long tournament, doesn't matter. They're not going to win. And they're one of the playoff teams, right? So if you said, hey, would you rather wrap this thing up and then let's start in October, you know, business as usual, play a full 82-game slate, get revenue back going, or play a tournament and we don't start till December, what do you think their answer would be? And I think that they're probably thinking long and hard going, the problem is that there is no guarantee that in October we'll be back with fans in the stands either. So that's there's the rub. I think that this is a challenge to Adam Silver. You've got to get him playing because the numbers will be high. And though it will be an expense, you know, and they'll take some losses because of it, I think it's worth it because it will really help the visibility of the NBA, which, you know, it's not what it used to be. NFL is king. And it will definitely, and I think you have a chance to have a really good product, you know, over a short period of time in the summer and get people excited about basketball again. It also allows them to change their schedule for the upcoming years, which I think would be smart. I think they start too early anyway, competing with football. But I don't know the answer. I tend to think they're going to play, but I don't think as many teams are as motivated to play as public perception would allow you to believe.
Doug, great stuff. Thank you for insight and great stuff to say about Randy Byford. Much appreciated, my man.
All right, buddy. Everybody stay safe out there.
You too, out there on the West Coast. Doug Gottlieb, Fox Sports. Really appreciate him hopping on here today. Matt Ravis is back in the studio. We're checking with him after this break. Stephen Jones, he's talking once again. This Dak Prescott contract and story won't go away. We'll discuss it when we get back on the Monsters of the Midday.
Of the Morning Animals.
About the Dak Prescott situation. I could never imagine calling my father by his first name. You know what I'm saying? Like, my dad's Dennis Dvorak. I call him Pops. I just couldn't imagine, you know, calling him Dennis. Now, I know this is more of a business setting, but that kind of struck me there as Steven's referring to his father as Jerry.
What do you think their relationship is like? That's very interesting to me.
It seems like it's pretty good. I don't know. You know, they're typically right next to each other. When things are going well, they're smiling. When things aren't going so well, they look pretty distraught.
Sure.
But I would guess it's pretty good. I don't know. I mean, he's left him in this role for a long time.
Yeah. You know, and Stephen Jones has done a good job, especially of drafting, right? I mean, a lot of their best draft picks have his fingerprints all over them. So kind of wonder if Jerry ever, wanted a little bit more credit for some of those picks. I don't know.
Possibly. I think Stephen Jones has done a nice job, especially with the draft, as you just mentioned there. I also think what he said there, I'm buying what he's saying, Matt. I think they have made Dak Prescott a very fair offer. And they just can't figure out what's a good deal for the Cowboys and a good deal for Dak. And I don't know, I'm a Cowboys fan. I'm a Dak Prescott fan too, but I mean, I'm a Cowboys fan. I'm trying to look at this. I typically look at these things as a former player through the player's point of view. But the fact that this is a team I root for, I also catch myself looking at it with Cowboys color glasses. But if I try to take all the bias away, Matt, I really am buying what Stephen Jones is selling there. Like, I mean, to me, they've made Dak Prescott legitimate quality offers. They just haven't been exactly what he wants. Do you have that other clip for me where he talks about analytics?
I do.
Play that other clip for me from Stephen Jones. A little bit more from the COO of the Dallas Cowboys, Stephen Jones.
You know, there's all sorts of analytics out there that show if your quarterback takes up too big a percentage of your salary cap, that, you know, it decreases your chances to win. So just trying to figure out the right fit. No one wants to sign Dak to a longer-term deal more than Jerry and myself. We're on the record time and time again on what we think of him as a leader. He has the it factor. He's a fierce competitor. He wants to win as well, and it's just got to be right for him and right for us. We'll continue to work to a conclusion on that.
So there you go. Interesting that Stephen Jones is bringing up analytics.
Yeah.
And I will say, I don't know also, I mean, he just signed Zeke Elliott, a running back, to a massive contract. I don't know what the analytics say about paying your running back that much either. But I will just say, so I probably wouldn't have gone the analytics route, but what I will say is, I mean, the information backs up what Stephen's saying, Matt.
Yeah, it doesn't take analytics to know that you want to have your salary spread out nicely and all over
That's
the
right.
field. And here is, if I'm Dak, here's the way that I'm approaching it, and here's where I can see Dak's side of this. It's not my fault that you paid Zeke Elliott. It's not my fault that you extended, you know, Jalen Smith, or, you know, name other guys who, you know, who have gotten multi-year extensions. Exactly. It wasn't his responsibility to, you know, make sure those guys got paid. So now it's his turn.
I get that. I understand that. But what I'll say is this. This was this morning. No team since 2000 has won the Super Bowl with a quarterback ranking the top five of the NFL in cap hit. Okay, so that's why I've always said that's one of the secrets of the sauce of the Patriots. Tom Brady's willingness to take less, to allow Belichick and the Patriots to put more pieces around him. It's also interesting that if you look at the quarterbacks that have played most recently in a lot of Super Bowls, you know, they don't eat up a lot of cap space. Patrick Mahomes still on his rookie deal. Jared Goff still on his rookie deal. We can look back at Nick Foles, or even when Carson Wentz was still on his rookie deal. You really have to go back to Matt Ryan, who made 18% back in 16 to have a quarterback, and since 2012 to eat up more than 15% of the cap. And so I do think that there is stats that will validate and back up what Stephen Jones said there. And I guess I just look at it like this. You make good points. To me, Zeke Elliott is one of the best running backs in football. I still think they overpaid for him. But at least you're paying one of the best running backs in pro football, top running back money, right? DeMarcus Lawrence was coming off a monster year. Now, he didn't play great last year. But if he can return to the guy that he was the 2 years leading up to him making that money, he's probably one of the top five pass rushers in pro football. And that's why they paid him that kind of money. I don't believe, and I'm basing this off of the Cowboys, I don't think they believe that Dak Prescott is a top five quarterback, though they've already extended him top five money. Like, that's what's so funny here. It's as if you'd think the Cowboys haven't offered him anything worth a darn. They've offered him $34 million. They've offered him $1 million less than Russell Wilson. And I think those two are in different classes. Like, you know, I hear my man Dan Orlovsky say this a lot. What does he say? You don't pay a good quarterback, great quarterback money? No doubt you don't. And here's the other aspect that's different about quarterbacks, and it's their own doing. Their contracts are on a different scale than anybody else in pro football. For whatever reason, owners have made it that way. Quarterbacks make significantly more than any other position, and I'm not trying to hate on them for that. But that's when you talk about percentage of the salary cap that it gets so skewed for these quarterbacks and the amount of money that they are commanding now. And Dak Prescott was already offered $34 million a year and over $9 million in guaranteed money. Would make him, I think it'd be top three guaranteed money in the history of pro football, and he'd be a top five paid quarterback right now. Like, it's not that the Cowboys aren't making him good offers. They have made him good offers. Clearly, Dak Prescott and his people want him to get the richest deal that a quarterback has ever gotten. And I get it from Stephen and Jerry Jones' side, man. Like, he's not the best quarterback in pro football. And I know somebody would say, well, that's not how it goes. It's who's ever up next. And, you know, it's just the way that it goes. You just pay the quarterback that's up next. I would disagree with that logic. I don't think you just pay out the ears because he's up next. I don't think that that's the way it should be at all. And I don't know who's going to cave here. I don't know what's going to happen. But I agree with the thought process and the way the Joneses have handled this whole thing with Dak. I really do.
There's just something really, really strange to me about this because, you know, personally speaking, if I'm Dak Prescott, you offer me $100 million guaranteed, I'm taking it. $100 million guaranteed in the NFL is not something that many people can say that they've been offered. So to me, like, is it years? He wants 5 years. They're offering him four. What is that hang up here?
He wants four. Cowboys want him to give him a five.
Gotcha.
Which is interesting because typically it's the other way around. But as we're seeing more and more short-term deals. Players want that money up front, want it guaranteed, and they can get back around so they can get to that next contract.
Is that when the TV deal renews as well in 4 years?
I think so. It's, well, they're negotiating that like this year. That was why they wanted to get this CBA done so quickly. Like within the next calendar year, they're going to look to renegotiate 10-year contracts with their TV partners.
In 2022, they'll be up for renewal.
Correct. And they're going to start negotiating that next season. So they're going to try to get something on the books before that ever even comes up. And that's one of the things the owners really wanted and were pushing to get this CBA ratified so they could go ahead and get that piece in place and they could start to go sell to these TV networks that, look, we've got 10 years of peace agreement ready to go. Let's get a deal done for the future for the next 10 years. So they do think that there's a chance that the cap could potentially go up. But I would say this right now, who knows what's going to happen with that, Matt?
Right. Yeah, right. No, that's true. It's hard to forecast that.
There's no way of knowing for any of these professional leagues. You know, they've had projected caps, but what is the last 2 months and what are the next 12 months going to do to any of those caps? Nobody really knows at this point. So I don't know, man. It's interesting to hear people on both sides of this Dak Prescott thing. I mean, I hear a lot of people just saying you should pay Dak whatever he wants. And I just think to myself, wow, I have not heard that thought process very often in professional sports. Just give a guy whatever he wants because you've paid other players that you deem at the very top of their position top money. That means just give your quarterback top money. I don't know anybody that thinks Dak Prescott's a top five quarterback. And the Cowboys have already offered him top five money. So that's why I look at it, and I just think that they've put forth a quality, very fair deal that they feel makes sense for them. And if I'm in the Dak Prescott camp, and this guy was a fourth-round pick, he's played well. He's earned himself a payday. But the way I look at it, the Cowboys are offering him a huge payday. They're just not wanting to make him the richest player in the history of the National Football League. And I don't blame them.
Yeah, it's what is the deadline? Is it July 15th, right? They've got 2 months to get this thing done?
Yeah, they got 2 months to get this
thing done. So it'll just drag out another 2 months.
This will not be the last time we talk about this or somebody is on a podcast or on an interview and making comments about it. But I hope something gets done. And at the very least, I expect Dak Prescott, and I'd be fine if he just signed his franchise tender, if we're being completely honest. I mean, I know that's not ideally what Dak wants, but if he wants to play for that 1 year tender and go prove himself next year, if he goes and he plays under that franchise tag, he goes and takes with these amazing weapons. That's another thing I think Dak should look at. Look at the willingness of this organization to put unbelievable pieces around him. I mean, there's a lot of quarterbacks who would give anything to have what Dak has around him on offense. Wouldn't you think, Matt?
Absolutely. What helped them get, like, they were top five offense last year. That's 100% why they were.
Absolutely. I mean, let's go back to before they made the move to go get Amari Cooper. Dak wasn't doing so hot. It was a struggle the first eight games of the season. But he's got an organization that recognizes that about him, that we got to put pieces around him. They love the leadership. They love a lot of the things that he brings to the table. They want him to be the franchise quarterback. They also just know we can't pay him whatever he wants and just throw anybody out there because Dak Prescott, he's not Tom Brady. He's not Russell Wilson to me. He's not Aaron Rodgers when Aaron Rodgers was at an elite level. He's not Patrick Mahomes. He doesn't raise the level of everyone else on the roster's play. As a matter of fact, he kind of need everyone else around him to be really good for him to go out there. So I wish I understand it's business and he's looking to cash in. I wish he would recognize and appreciate that aspect of what the Cowboys have already put in place around him.
Hey, really quickly.
It's really good.
Really quickly, did you see what Kirk Cousins said to his advice to Dak?
Sign the franchise
tag. Yeah, it's your friend. You can make $70 million over 2 years signing the franchise tag.
That's right. That's the other thing that I don't get about this. It's like, I mean, that is an option that Dak can always go down, get that guaranteed money, and the Cowboys can franchise him again next year. Or if they decide not to, Dak doesn't play well, he can go be a free agent and maybe go find a team that thinks he's as good as he thinks he is. I don't know. I mean, that's always an option too. Yeah, how bad did that work out for Kirk Cousins? Because it didn't, right? Skins franchised him twice and then eventually let him walk as a free agent. And he's on his second big deal in Minnesota,
yeah,
I believe?
Yeah, it's fully guaranteed contract, yeah.
I don't think it's gone poorly for Kirk Cousins. I mean, I know everybody looks at these franchise tags. They think they're the worst thing in the history of mankind. The reality is that franchise tag, I believe, is going to pay him just about what the Cowboys have already offered on an annual basis. What that doesn't have is that big chunk of guaranteed money up front. So you go get hurt, something happens. Well, now maybe you can't make that money, but that's why it's rolling the dice, and it is a bit of a gamble. At the end of the day, I think Dak's going to be in camp, when or if camp happens. I think it's going to take all the way probably up until close to July 15th, because it seems like both sides are dug in like an Alabama tick. It also brings up a question to me. I know we got to hit a break here, but I mean, I know quarterback is, we hear all the time, it's one of the most important positions in all of sports. But given the way, you know, you have to work the cap and you have to, as you said perfectly, spread that money out as evenly as you can to put together a 53-man roster. Of all the sports, one person doesn't impact a team or winning in football as much as they do definitely in basketball. And I would say even baseball, you could have probably put at certain positions pitcher a greater importance on that. So I, you know, to me, I think there's a real case to be made. How much is too much to pay for a quarterback that's not an elite quarterback? Because the strain that puts on your organization to be able to properly put together a 53-man roster, I think is very, very real, and that's essentially exactly what Stephen Jones said there to Mike Florio. Danny Green, wow, I'm so glad you had me come across this ad. Danny Green, it's crazy times, and some people are willing to sell whatever they can to make some money. We'll explain in detail next.
He is the pioneer of sports.
Hey, thanks for joining the show. Got Brett McMurphy of Stadium coming up 1:30. Get the latest in college football. Brett has been dialed in, talking to all these, so many athletic directors, conference commissioners. He had some breaking news at the end of last week, and we will talk with him about all that and get an update on where we stand, at least based off of what he's hearing, for college football, especially college football in the fall. As I referenced, everybody is looking for ways to make money these days. And I think that would include endorsing products that maybe other times we might not. Now, I'm not saying that's the case with Danny Green here, but I'm just saying anything is possible at this point in time. And Matt, I found this off of, you had like quote tweeted, the main tweet.
Yeah. Yes.
And I found it funny. You know, I don't want to divulge too much of my personal information, but Danny Green here is trying to pitch manscaping. So before I tell you about my own personal situations, let's hear from Danny Green on his latest product to make the men out there that much better.
Fellas, if you lived as long as I have, you know there's two very important things that you must take care of. And both of those are your balls. For one, it should not look like this. Fuzzy, hairy, just plain dirty. Don't even want to
tennis balls.
Sure, the ladies prefer but they look like this. Smooth, silky, like a baby's bottom.
Wow.
Be sure enough, you show up to the bedroom with the dirty, fuzzy, hairy balls, they will end up looking like this before you go home. This shade of blue is not what you want. It's not
blue balls.
And it doesn't feel right. If you want to get rid of the dirty, fuzzy, hairy and not get that shade of blue, be sure to get the Lawnmower 3.0 by Manscaped.
Lawnmower,
oh boy.
3.0 by Manscaped. Wow. That is, I didn't even know there was a Lawnmower 1.0 or a 2.0, let alone a 3.0. Danny Green dropping knowledge on us, Matt.
That is some serious machinery that he had in his hand, too. You didn't see that, but I would recommend checking that out. By the way, two free gifts. I enjoy that they throw in two free gifts with that.
Fuzzy, hairy, dirty balls. He's saying that the ladies don't like that. Why do they got to be dirty, though? I mean, why does he got to throw a dirty tennis ball up there? Why couldn't he just put a nice, clean tennis ball
up? Well, he had the props ready. I thought he did a pretty good ad read there, too. He was a pro about it.
Lawnmower 3.0. I mean, I don't even know. Does he actually, I cut it off with about 5 seconds left. Does he pull the product out and show it?
Yes, he does. He does.
Okay.
Looks like a nice trimmer.
Okay, that's all it is. Just we're talking about a beard trimmer?
Yeah, it's basically a beard trimmer.
Okay, well, all I will say is I cannot vouch for the Lawnmower 1, 2, or definitely not the 3.0. It's not my rotation. But what I can say is this. Be very, very, very careful with your buddies down there when you're trying to do manscaping. And I just say, just proceed with caution, Matt. That would be my advice to anyone out there who is wanting, as Danny says, to make it smooth and silky and alleviate any chance of the blue balls. I would just say proceed with caution and be very careful. That can be a highly dangerous situation.
There are not many injuries I would less want to walk around with, that's for sure.
The Lawnmower 3.0. That's next level stuff. I mean,
he's Shaq. I mean, Shaq will endorse anything. I think Danny Green is heading in that direction too.
Well, they played together in Cleveland for a little bit, right?
Yeah, I guess that's right. Yeah.
I mean, again, hey, you know, Danny Green is not basketball right now. When's it going to return? We don't really know. So, I guess
by the comments, I would recommend you go look at the comments too from all of his buddy LeBron was. Yeah,
what did they say? What did they say?
In tears over it, they just could not believe that he really did that.
I hope Manscaped.com and the Lawnmower 3.0. I sure hope they threw some real money at him, because that would definitely be something I would say inside a professional locker room. That's going to draw some attention. That's clearly something that I think is going to create a bit of a buzz. Literally, I think a bit of a buzz with the Lawnmower 3.0.
Nicely done.
Again, I would say there's nothing wrong with keeping things nice and tidy, nice and clean. Just be careful. It can be a very delicate situation. And if you don't have the Lawnmower 3.0, who knows? It could get a little dicey. Thank you, Danny Green. Thank you very much. We appreciate that's a hell of an ad read too, by the way. I don't know how many takes that took, but he nailed that thing, man. I gotta imagine manscaped.com. They are very happy with the money they spent on their endorser. When we get back, I want to talk some college football. Some good comments that I saw this morning. We will play from you, Florida head coach Dan Mullen. He speaks also a little bit of talk of some changing of schedules already for the upcoming fall. I'll tell you exactly what I mean on the other side of this break. Don't go anywhere. Keep it here on the Monsters of the Midday.
The Oklahoma Lottery, the sports.
And these athletic departments will be underwater without college football.
Paul Feinbaum there talking this morning on Get Up, talking about the upcoming college football season. Interesting the verbiage he used there. Survival of the fittest. Been saying that for weeks now is, you know, essentially what we can expect. Some of these conferences, individual schools, I mean, they're going to be looking after their own best interests.
Adapt and survive, right?
You have to right now, man. I mean, you would love a perfect world where all of the NCAA could move forward together, but that's just not going to be the case.
Yeah.
I mean, there's going to be some schools, some programs that aren't ready, and some that are potentially, and those that are, it sure sounds as if, man, they're going to hit the ground running.
Yeah, and I think some, even if they are ready, are not allowed to, you know, depending on what state they're in, to get going. So
that's exactly right.
I think that's definitely another part of it. I've got another clip from Feinbaum here if you wanted to play that.
I do. Okay, hang on. Do we have Dan Mullen's comments?
It got lost in translation a little bit here.
Okay, fair enough. Give me Paul Feinbaum. What do you had to say about a potential matchup early in the season?
It's going to come down to the five Power Five commissioners, Greeny. Those are the men who will sit at the table and decide. And one thing very interesting about it, there's already scrambling going on. Alabama plays Southern Cal in the first game of the season at Jerry's World. There's already talk going on between Alabama and TCU about meeting instead of the other two, because TCU plays at Berkeley, and the California schools, they do not believe, will be available for that day.
I found that
fascinating.
Juicy. That's juicy is what I thought, man. I mean, because who wouldn't want to see that? I mean, Gary Patterson, we saw them play there against Ohio State just a couple of years ago. But Gary Patterson, Nick Saban, that's juicy to me. And, you know, I wonder how prevalent those type of talks are going on. Like, you know, if the West Coast already is looking at it, state, you know, schools, the state of California, there's a real chance that maybe they're not ready to reopen or ready to get going. Would we see some of these schools and conferences or states that are going to get the all clear? Are they going to try to create some games? I mean, that's what Paul Feinbaum just said right there, right? I mean, he said that he was told about this. So
yeah.
I thought that was juicy. I mean,
that's
a potential Bama TCU. And as he said, Bama doesn't play USC. And TCU doesn't go out to Berkeley, and they wind up just playing each other. I wonder how many of those type of conversations could be going on now and will continue to go on these next couple of months.
Yeah, it does make me wonder. You know, I think about OU. I think about OSU. You know, is Joe Castiglione, who is he talking to right now? Last week, we heard about Texas and Texas A&M trying to renew a rivalry. I had no faith that these two are ever going to play each other, but I mean, does this provide an avenue? They are so close to each other, Dusty. They could easily make that happen.
I don't think, because like you said, there was conversation last week and it got shut down. I don't think we'll see that rivalry happen for a long time. And it's as, I mean, you're correct. That Austin, College Station, proximity are not that far. I mean, clearly have been rivals for a very, very long time. I just, wow, I would love to see it. I wish we could see it. Like, I love rivalries. I think it only makes sense for those two schools. And again, I don't know about this year. I guess we could say, you know, throw out the record books. They're just trying to get games in. They're just trying to create revenue. And that's very real. I guess I'm looking more big picture, long term. I don't think either one of those schools wants to actually play each other, because the team that loses, it will be so significantly bad.
Sure.
Both of these schools rather sit there and say, well, yeah, if I'm Texas, we'd beat A&M. We're the more dominant program and school in the state. And if you're Texas A&M, you're going to say the same thing. Oh, we play in the SEC West. We play better teams than you guys each and every week. We would mop the floor with you. But neither team's ever actually going to want to get on the field again, I think, unless they're made to and actually play this out. They would rather, you know, brag on themselves and never have to take the hit of losing, as opposed to if they actually played, somebody is actually going to win, somebody's going to actually lose. And I don't think the fact that that loser, it could cost them in recruiting and a lot of different ways, I don't think that they want to go down that path. I think it's weak, but I think that's where we're at with that rivalry.
I think I'm with you, and that's why I don't really have faith, but I do wonder, I don't know, I just wonder if that could happen just out of necessity. And look, this is really low-hanging fruit to pick on A&M in Texas and Oklahoma, but it sounds like it was A&M that didn't want to play. It sounds like they were the ones, and of course that could be politic and that could be Texas putting that out. It sounds like they were the ones who didn't want to do the home-and-home.
Look, we hear about this every year.
Sure,
and I just feel like it's, I don't know. Again, maybe it's just A&M. I think it's both these guys. I look at it. I don't think that either one want to, because and maybe it is just A&M. I don't know, but I think deep down, it looks good for Del Conte and Texas to say that they want to play Texas A&M, but I don't know how much either place really wants to make it happen.
Yeah, I'm with you. Hey, by the way, I've tracked down these Dan Mullen comments if you want to hear those about the upcoming college football season.
The Flo Rida Gators head football coach Dan Mullen did an excellent job there in Florida. What, two double-digit win seasons to get things kick-started in Gainesville? Let's hear what Dan Mullen had to say with ESPN's Laura Rutledge.
I think what we have to do is we can't sit here and get caught in the, until every single school in the country is ready to get back and play football, no schools can start. I think that is a very naive and way of thinking. I don't think it's a very healthy way of thinking. I don't think it's good for the sport or the game of football or for the individuals that are playing.
I mean, he's saying exactly what we just said, Matt. I mean, it's survival of the fittest, right? I mean, if we're ready to go, we want to be able to go. We don't want to have to sit around and wait on people in other parts of the country and other states that aren't ready to go. If we're ready to go, we're going. And I know it sounds selfish, but I get it, man. I understand why these various schools and these programs, if they get from their local governments, if they get the ability to push on, I understand from a financial aspect, as we've talked about for months now, what having games can mean, what playing football in the fall could mean, not just financially, but in a lot of different other aspects for universities. I get it, man. And I understand why they don't want to sit around and wait for the rest of college football if certain conferences or if certain schools within states are ready to go. And that's why I can't wait to talk to Brettman Murphy. He's been reporting on this for weeks now. It's hard to find many places that don't have that viewpoint right now, Matt, because I don't hear many people saying outside of the NCAA that, mm-hmm. If the Pac-12 isn't quite ready, or if Rutgers in the Big Ten, we're just going to shut things down. We're not even going to go forward. I don't hear people saying that. Like, it seems as if this is becoming the theme. More and more people are going to talking about this upcoming football season.
I guess, is that just because some people have gotten really, really criticized for coming out and saying, things that I doubt that there may be a college football season, like Kirk Herbstreit, for example. I don't know if maybe that's in reaction to that, but it is interesting to me because, you have Dan Mullen coming out and saying, yeah, we have every plan to. The Alabama, I believe the athletic director, right, said that we have a plan to have all the fans in the stands. Now, I don't think that's going to happen. It's a great plan, but I don't think it's going to happen. But what if they don't even have students on campus at that point? What if the school doesn't decide to have students on campus?
That is what is so huge in all of this. We've talked on this show a lot. We've had Bob Bowlesby on this show, and we've heard from a lot of people that you need to have fans in the stands. Brett McMurphy reported last week, after talking with conference commissioners, athletic directors, that has changed. Even Bob Bowlesby on record at the end of last week as saying essentially, if it's online courses going on at college, that suffices. That's not what he'd been saying. So even with that, Matt, even with just kids on campus, it seems as if, and we're going to talk with Brett Murphy that exact point, there has been a seismic shift here in the last week or so as to how conferences and universities are looking at that in particular. Kids on campus, and potentially, even if there's not kids on campus, it's online only, still having football. Something a month ago we thought couldn't even be possible. Now we're hearing it might be very possible.
That is amazing to me, because that's the whole foundation of college sports for the past how many decades has been student athletes. They are students first, then athletes second. And now, like you said, the past few weeks, all of a sudden we said, I guess we don't have the same illusions about that anymore.
It's one of the things that has really emerged throughout all of this is. And I think that most people know, college football is big business. If you don't know that at this point, your head's been in the sand. It is. It's not professional sports, but it's big, big business. And I think that we've all always known that, but this entire situation, I think, has brought it to light and put it in a different perspective than most people had prior to all these COVID-19 events.
Yeah, absolutely. We've talked on the show, too, about how a lot of things are going to change in every level of life, in every walk of life. I mean, the definition of amateurism going forward, I'm just wondering, what is that going to look like?
It's a good question. I don't have a great answer, but it's definitely a good question.
You may need a crystal ball for that, because I would love a crystal ball, by the way. It would have been very nice throughout all of this.
We've got one of those magic eight balls. I can go rub on it and see what it tells me.
It's better than nothing.
What is it? Signs point to yes?
Yeah, signs point to yes. Ask me again another time.
There's like five or six different answers that you continually get. When that first came out when I was a kid, maybe it didn't first come out, but I first knew about it, I thought it was the greatest thing ever. And then after like shaking it up for like that week straight and I'm getting the same dang answers, I'm like, man, this isn't as cool as what I thought it was going to be. But yes, we could all use a crystal ball to look into the future. Unfortunately, we're not privy to that. But the last 2 to 3 weeks in particular, I say this a lot because I want to make sure I'm not speaking out of turn. Nobody, I don't think, knows for certain. I can't think of anyone that knows for certain if there will definitely be football played in the fall. I think that there's still a lot of time. There's still a lot of information. But I think anybody that wouldn't acknowledge in the last 2 to 3 weeks that universities are gearing up and planning to have kids on campus – a lot of universities are gearing up and planning to have student-athletes on campus this summer, primarily football players to start training, and schools and universities are gearing up and planning and preparing for a football season this fall. Could that all fall apart and not happen? Sure. Anything is possible right now, given the landscape we're in. But, Matt, I mean, the planning and preparation 3 weeks ago, there's some, you know, people thought they're planning and preparing and it's going to be a spring season, that essentially the fall has been scrapped. And I would say it's been the exact opposite of that the last 2 to 3 weeks. If anything, there's no certainty that it's going to happen, but it sure feels like a big chunk of big players in college athletics are gearing up and planning for football this fall. Will it happen? What's it look like? Big questions that I don't think anybody can give you an exact answer on. But I think the first step into having football in the fall or students on campus is to plan and prepare for those things to happen. And that's what we're seeing all across the sport right now, at least what we've seen really emerge these last couple of weeks.
I think what Jeff Passan said about baseball is you can broadly apply to sports right now, which is, look, it's ugly and it's easy to get pessimistic, but there's way too much to lose for all parties at hand for this season to not happen in some form.
They're trying to look at every possible scenario, right? But I mean, I think that the first and foremost one is to try to have some type of college football this fall. And just that Alabama TCU topic that Feinbaum brought up, and I hadn't even really thought about that. I mean, I guess I'd be lying. I kind of have. I'll just throw this out there. I'm not saying that I think this could happen, but I mean, I wonder if, you know, we get down to it and there's certain amount of schools, I don't know how many it'll be, that decide, you know what, we're in a good place. Our state says it's okay. We've got the testing in place. We got the protocols in place. We're going to give it a go. That's not going to be everywhere. But I wonder if we will see kind of like, I have thought, you know, will we see games added that are close in proximity, like in the non-conference? And I know a lot of people said just conference games. What if, like, Oklahoma State played Arkansas? What if, you know, Lincoln, Nebraska is not down the street, but it's not that far. And I know that they're playing pretty soon, but what if you could create some games that are in close proximity, you know, similar to what they're talking about with Bama and TCU there, that are in states that, you know, restrictions have been loosened, and you could add a potential game there that's going to, you know, I'm not saying you can pack in the stadium, but it's good for TV dollars. I don't know. I just wonder if we're going to see more of that talk, because that's the first time I've heard real talk of schools looking to amend or change their schedule and add a different opponent to it. And if that's being talked about in Tuscaloosa and in Fort Worth of those schools, I would think it's being talked about elsewhere. That could be – that's a fascinating little wrinkle that I've briefly thought about, but I haven't done much more than just kind of spitball in my own head. So
yeah, I wonder how real that is. I mean, it seems like
I don't know.
And Feinbaum, you know, he never says something on accident, right? I mean, he has lots of conversations. So
yeah, no, that was pointed. I mean, he didn't just throw that out there to throw it out there. I mean, we don't know how far advanced talks are, any of that kind of stuff. But I think the fact that people are just thinking outside the box to try if there's games on the schedule that you feel confident may not happen. What can we do to create, new games? I don't know. I think right now there's nothing wrong with having outside-the-box thinking. But I think Brett McMurphy will be able to give us a little bit more thought on this topic when we talk with him in a second. One more thing on TCU. Did you see TCU signed first five-star recruit in the history of the school yesterday?
Yeah, the running back, Zachary Evans, right? Is that his name?
That is his name. I don't know a whole lot about Zach Evans. He's the number 16 overall recruit in his class per ESPN.com. What he initially signed with Georgia, and then he said he went back and forth with his decision during recruitment, signing with Georgia in December, early signing period. He was scheduled to announce that decision on January 2nd, but did not make the announcement. 5 days later, Evans was released from his national letter of intent from Georgia, and ultimately, he landed on TCU. So one of the top running backs, one of the top recruits in the country from this previous class, he will be at TCU coming up next season. So a name to keep your eye on in the Big 12, Zach Evans, one of the top recruits in the country, TCU, their biggest recruit, I believe, in the history of the school. I saw their first five-star that they've ever landed. So big news there for Gary Patterson and the Horned Frogs. We will speak with Brett Murphy at Stadium when we get back next segment as he gives us more info, the latest on college football. Keep it here on the Monsters of the Midday.
Of the Morning Animals.
Welcome back. It is the Monsters of the Midday on a Tuesday. Thanks for joining the show. Brett McMurphy here very soon. He'll call in about 1:30 before we get to him. Matt Ravis, you're telling me in the break a little bit of news dropped by Woj. What you got for me?
Not quite a Woj bomb, but he does say that the Players Association of the NBA regional representative started texting players just with a simple yes or no question. Do you want to play again this season? So they're kind of taking a straw poll there. That's very interesting to me.
Do we have any results on that?
No results yet. Here's another update here from Woj. This was just a couple minutes ago. Some teams received the question as part of a group text that included the entire roster. You're asking people, basically, do you want the season to start again? But we don't know about any of the results yet.
I want to I can't wait to see what the results show.
I think they're going to be overwhelmingly yes, I think.
I would think so, too. I mean, again, I think the biggest thing for all these professional leagues or college is making sure that if I was a player, I just want to make sure that, they're following protocols and that what we're doing is safe. And I think so long as that's the case, if you're a professional athlete, why wouldn't you want to go play and do what you do?
Yeah, with the caveat, of course, like you said, that it's going to be safe and that you have all of these protocols and stuff like that. Yeah, absolutely.
And I not that this is part of their job, but I mean, in a way, they would be therapeutic for the rest of the country. You know, I recognize that's not what they're there to do. They're professional athletes. They're there to get paid a good wage because they're highly skilled at their sport. Right. At the end of the day, that's what they're there to do. So they should not have. I'm not saying that they have to take that burden on their shoulders to try to help make the country feel better. But I don't know. I think there's an element of me that would take pride in that, Matt. Like, again, given that if it's safe, there's a lot of people out there. I don't want to say they need sports, but they could use sports. I just think that from a morale standpoint, I think it could really go a long way. So, again, not that that's Not that that's basketball or baseball players' end-all, be-all, and they don't have to do that, but I do think it would serve a lot of good in this country if they're able to get back.
Sure, absolutely. That'd be good for everybody. I'm curious, Dusty. This is where my mind went whenever I heard this report. I'm curious to know the Warriors or the Knicks. How do they feel?
They don't want in. They want it to be over.
Yeah, they want it to be. They want to go on vacation, or they want to get a little bit extra money.
If Steve Kerr is speaking for his team, they want to go on vacation.
Yeah, yeah.
The Golden State Warriors, I get it. I don't agree with them, but I understand where they sit. I mean, they want this thing to end. This has been an awful season. They'd love to see the end of it, but I also understand a lot of teams that would love to finish it. Doug brought up some good points with the owners. Just, is it cost-effective to come back? Only have games on TV? I mean, I don't know. He talked about all the different people they'd have to pay. I'm not exactly sure on that, but I would think even if you're close to breaking even, it just seems like for the sport, that spot that they could potentially get July and August, I think it could be absolutely huge. All right, let's talk with our next guest. Bretman Murphy does an excellent job covering college football. He's been dropping news on us for months now on this topic, and we appreciate him joining the show. Brett, how you doing, man?
Great to talk to you, Dusty. How you doing?
I'm doing well, just probably similar to you, just kind of sitting, waiting, and reading different things that you and the great people that cover our sport are putting out on a daily basis. Be sure to check out Bretman Murphy at Stadium Network. You dropped something last week that I think it was Friday, maybe it was a combination of Thursday and Friday, and it threw my world into just crazyville, because one thing that I had heard through all this, and I've been told, talk to Bowlesby as you have, listen to people, is that the one thing that seemed clear, you had to have students on campus to have football in the fall. But your reporting at the end of last week, based off of conference commissioners and different people you had spoke to, was not that way. Tell me what you found out at the end of last week, Brett.
Well, you're right, Dusty, but basically, their philosophy has changed on this. I think for the past several weeks that it was perceived, if you will, that the general students would have to be on campus for us to have college football. But, I talked to Bob Bowlesby. I talked to John Swofford with the ACC, Mike Oresko, the American, several other commissioners. And there seems to be, a 180 on that. Now they're open to the idea of, again, if the safety and health of the student athletes is not compromised and they can only bring back the student athletes and not the general student population, then they would not be opposed to playing college football. The reason is if we get down to two options, and one option is no football because the student body can't come back to the campus, or option two is we can play but only the student athletes can come back in a safe environment, they are absolutely going to play. Now, Larry Scott with the Pac-12 told me that he would not be in favor of that if the general student body could not return. However, he did follow up and say that if some of the general students could return, he would be okay with the student athletes playing. So I didn't grill him on how many are some students, but technically that could be 100 students, that could be 500, that could be 1,000. It just means we don't need to bring 20 or 30,000 students back on campus to play. And again, the individuals that are in favor of that, and there are a lot of people, including a lot of athletic directors, their argument is with a smaller group on campus, it's going to be easier to monitor those individuals, keep them safe, keep a smaller area, risk-free and all those factors. So in theory, it should be easier that way. But again, we still have several weeks to go. But if it comes down to two options of not playing or playing with just the student athletes on campus, they're going to find out a way to play, and they may spin it some way. But bottom line, it's because of the finances, obviously.
That's fascinating. Great reporting, Brett. That was the first I'd heard of it. I just struck me, and that's I think that's very significant.
It is a change. You're right. It is a change.
It feels like, Brett, in the last, I'm going to say 2 to 3 weeks. I want to say 2 weeks ago from last Friday, that's when Joe Harris, now the not just interim, but the president of Oklahoma, he said, we are planning to have classes in the fall. And I felt like that weekend on, I saw a domino effect. I saw a lot of places kind of say similar things. We're hearing a lot from people in the last couple of weeks about playing in the fall. Alabama athletic director even said that they're planning to have fans in the stands. That seems a bit optimistic to me. But have you noticed that? Is there seem to be a real push, more so in the last few weeks than what we had seen, for some form and some fashion of football being played in the fall?
Yes, but I take that all with a grain of salt, because they're all going to say, we plan to be back, we intend to be back. You know, we plan to have had the NCAA men's basketball tournament, and it got canceled overnight, literally. So a lot of these schools are making these announcements because the enrollment numbers for these students are down compared with previous years, so they, because of all the uncertainty, and understandably so. So you've got all these schools coming out saying, we plan to be back, we intend to be back. But I don't think anybody can definitively say until we get to mid-July that, yes, we are definitely – our doors are going to be open, and or we are going to play, and here's when we're going to start. Right now, I think it's more wishful thinking than anything else. Believe me, I hope they're right. I mean, if so, that would be clutch. Man, that would be unbelievable. But I, you know, take it with a grain of salt right now. I don't mean to, you know, douse your whole theory, but I think right now it's just, they're just trying to get as many people excited about coming back, paying deposits, all those sort of things that goes into, you know, the university lifestyle.
You're definitely not dousing my theory. Brett Murphy, Stadium Network. I'm looking at what I'm seeing around me, and it seems as if, I'll say this, in order to have something in the fall, you got to plan and prepare for it. So, again,
They're planning, no question. They've got to, and it's specifically the college football season, they've got dozens of plans. But they just don't know which plans they can implement because they don't know when they're going to get the all clear.
Right.
And another thing that I talked to some commissioners about is, you know, you look at the different conferences, and the SEC and Big Ten have 14 members. They're spread out over 11 states. So what if you have some schools within your own conference that can't play? Well, talking to Bowlesby and Swofford and Sankey and everyone else, the sense I get is that if 10 of the 14 schools in the SEC can play and four can't, they are going to play without those four schools. And I think because of that, we are probably likely to see conference-only schedules, because it's going to be hard enough to redo your conference schedules. And so then to try to go out and refill your non-conference schedules if you've got teams from a different part of the country that can't play. So I think we end up with some kind of conference-only schedule. Maybe they add one non-conference opponent for each conference. So, you know, state rivalries that are not in the same conference, like Clemson, South Carolina, Florida State, those games can get played. But I think it's more likely that we have some – I think all conferences are not going to have all their schools back. I don't think all 65 Power 5 programs will be playing in the fall, and then you're going to have leagues playing without all of their members. And yeah, how does that impact the playoffs and all that stuff? I have no idea, but they will figure out a way to get this done, because this will be like no season that we've ever seen before.
It definitely you're 100% right on that. It will be like no season we've ever seen before. Mark Emmert, it's interesting, because I'm totally buying what you're saying. It feels like these five conference commissioners, they're the ones to keep an eye on. And these conferences and these schools, they can act independent of the NCAA. Because I saw Mark Emmert basically said the opposite to what you're saying about some of these conference commissioners about having kids on campus. So, I mean, is this going to be the start to these Power 5 leagues separating themselves from the NCAA potentially?
If Emmert wants to die on that hill, it will be, because the NCAA has no control over Division I college football. The college football playoff is run by the conferences. The bowl games are run by the conferences. The only thing the NCAA does, is monitor the eligibility of these student athletes. So this is not like the NCAA basketball tournament. Basketball is totally different. I don't think people realize that. And so, yeah, if Emmert wants to stand up on the hill and say, you guys are not going to play unless the general students are back, and the power conferences say, you know what, this is extraordinary times. We've got to take extraordinary measures, and so we're going to do it. He can't keep them from doing it. And, yeah, Dusty, I don't know if necessarily this is what causes the split, but I do think overall the coronavirus and the financial impact that we're seeing all over the country, I think this expedites the split between the Power Five and the Group of Five, whether that means the Power Five goes into a separate division within the NCAA or splits from the NCAA. I'm not sure, but I think the days of trying to pretend that San Jose State or Fresno State should compete and have the same rules and limitations as an Oklahoma or an Oklahoma State, I think those days have passed us by, and it's just a matter of time now until I think the Power League split from the Group of Five. Maybe they stay within the NCAA, maybe they don't, but certainly if Emmert wants to choose this battle, he's going to lose badly.
Seems like some of this very outdated. All right, last one for you, Brett. July 15th is a date that I've kind of heard from a lot of people. Kind of, if they're going to start the season on time in the fall, they need to have players on campuses by July 15th. Essentially, a 6-week re-implementation period. A, is that the date that you're hearing? And then B, when is not to have kids on campus, but is there a date that, as you've talked to these people, that they need to have a plan, whatever it is, in place and act on it? When should we expect that?
Well, yeah, you're dead on the July 15th. The student athletes would need to be on campus ready to go to start on time. And so you could probably back it up a week or two and say, okay, we've determined that student athletes are going to report on this date. We'll start practicing. The games will be played as scheduled. So I think that would be probably late June or early July. I'm not trying to be pessimistic. I'm just trying to be realistic.
Yeah.
I don't think we're going to start on time. I think there's going to be some kind of delay. And I do think one thing that kind of gets – and I gloss over it, too, when doing interviews. The biggest challenge that – and I don't know the answer to this. The biggest challenge is what kind of guidelines, what kind of protocols, what kind of safety measures are these universities and athletic departments going to have to implement to allow these student athletes to come back? That's the most difficult thing. And I understand, you know, if we get that in place, then we can have a season. But if we can't figure just that out, I don't know. I mean, Dr. Fauci said today, I saw he had a press conference or was speaking to reporters somewhere, where he didn't think it was realistic that schools in the fall would be able to test all students and they wouldn't be ready to go. He said that's a tough bridge to cross. So, you know, you've got the head of the White House medical staff saying, well, I don't think we can get guys back in the fall. And then you've got everybody else saying, hey, let's get going in mid-July. So that's where it's going to get tricky. But as far as the timeline, you're dead on. I think ultimately probably what happens is we get to late June, early July, and maybe they say, look, we're not going to be able to start on time. We'll make an announcement in another couple of weeks. Our hopes are to start in October, whenever it is, and then go with an abbreviated schedule then. I do know this. If they have a preference, they want to start as soon as they can, even if – and Bob Bowlesme told me this. Even he's afraid that midway through the year, when we get to November, that we could have another outbreak. They'd rather play as many games as they can and get the season in, as opposed to, well, let's just wait until the spring and then get going then. So we could actually see stoppage in play for a month or two, and then they could start back up again after the semester. Who knows? It's going to be a weird season, that's for sure.
Most indications are to me that obviously spring has been talked about, but that's almost a last-ditch effort if there's no way to play football this fall.
Yeah, absolutely. If we can't play in the fall, things keep getting moved back again. The alternative of no football is 1,000 times worse than playing in the spring. And I know all the challenges of playing in the spring with the NFL draft and the seasons bumping into, you know, next season starting a couple months after this season ends. I understand all that. But it's better than the alternative of having no football, because as one AD told me, he summed it up best for everybody. If we don't have football this year, we're all bleeped. And he's 100% right.
That's the best statement I've heard in a long time. He's Brett McMurphy, UConn's finest. We really appreciate his insight. College football and insider there at Stadium Network. Check him out. Nobody has covered all this as well as my man Brett. And follow him on Twitter, @Brett_McMurphy. Thanks so much for the time, man. Look forward to chatting again soon. Great stuff.
Anytime, Dusty. Thank you.
Thank you. Brett McMurphy. There you go. I don't think we could sum it up any better. Is there a better way to sum it up to what he just said? If there's no football in the fall, we're all bleeped. That right there, mic drop. Quick break. We'll tell you what Daryl Morey is tweeting when we get back on the Monsters of the Midday.
The dominant duo.
By the way, a man, Matt Rave, is a rising star in this area and in this profession. He will be on tonight filling in for the legend Al Ashbeck from 6 to 8. So if you're out and about in the car or if you're at the house, be sure to stream Matt tonight. He's got an action-packed show tonight, 6 to 8. Great job as always, Matt, and best of luck tonight filling in. And just remember, you know what you're getting yourself into from 6 to 8.
Yeah, the caller. I love Al's callers, though. I love talking to Al's callers.
So how about this? And I love them, too. I don't always get a chance to listen, but when I do, it's definitely entertaining. If anything stands out, make sure you clip it and you have it for the show tomorrow.
Okay.
I want to – if it doesn't have to be, you know – you'll know. Obviously, I'm telling you, but you know if something is worth bringing up
Certainly. The
next day.
Certainly.
My man, Daryl Morey. He's at it again. I thought this tweet that he fired out was awesome. Glad that it wasn't me tweeting it, being in the position he's in. But so, Rachel Nichols tweets out, she says, "Can't say I agree with Shaq's opinion that if the NBA resumes, any championship would have an asterisk next to it, a title that usually won in perfect conditions. There are always variances in who you face. Injuries, officiating this year, the variances are just more extreme." Daryl Morey quote tweets it, and he says, "This is why the Houston Rockets are destined to win this year. Houston championships always get an asterisk." How about that? Taking a shot at the Astros.
Dang.
The GM of the Houston Rockets. Getting some local organizational crime going with that comment.
I think that's a little bit of a shot at I think the national media too as well. Whenever they won a couple titles when Jordan retired, you know, everyone wanted to say, well, they wouldn't have those if Jordan was still playing.
That's right. Yeah, some people say that. You're right. I'm not one that does. I give Hakeem
absolutely.
I give Hakeem all the credit in the world. Dream Shake was. It was working there. I thought that cracked me up.
Is he the anti-Sam Presti? I feel like he is.
Yes.
I mean, Sam Presti is all about sustainability, long-term. We're building this thing. Daryl Morey is a riverboat gambler. He's pushing his chips in the middle of the table. He doesn't care what he says. I think he's the anti-Presti.
Daryl Morey lives in the now. Sam Presti is, like you said, always looking into the future. Daryl Morey, they polar opposites. There is no question. I don't know if we could have two GMs that are on opposite ends of the spectrum with their personalities and the way they voice, whether it be in press conferences or whether it be on social media, the way they voice their opinions on all kinds of things, including their teams, they just complete polar opposites. But it does bring up a good discussion because, as I kind of mentioned earlier with Doug Gottlieb, both Shaq and Charles Barkley are essentially on record as saying they should scrap the season. First of all, they say that there would definitely be an asterisk by the season, but they're essentially both saying they should go ahead and scrap the season. What do you think about that? First of all, are you going to look at if they finish the season and they have primarily an entire playoffs, are you going to look at this season with an asterisk? And what do you think about what Shaq and Barkley say about just shutting it down?
It is really easy for me to say now that no, there would be no asterisk. But I guess if some weird stuff happens, if the Lakers get beat by the eighth seed or whatever, then maybe you do. But on the face of it, I agree with Rachel Nichols. I mean, everyone is dealing with the same circumstances, so I wouldn't personally want to put an asterisk there.
If anything, I could make the point that this would be one of the toughest championships to earn, right? I mean,
absolutely. It's all about your adaptability. Yeah, no doubt.
I mean, look, I don't know. I don't get it. Like, I'm not with this at all. I mean, if you want to say there's an asterisk by it, look, none of us need an asterisk there to remember this period of our lives. We're going to remember it forever.
Sure.
Okay? What transpired March the 11th in Oklahoma City and what we've seen to this point, what are we, almost exactly 2 months since then?
Yeah, 2 months.
I mean, I don't need anything to tell me that times are different and it's not your typical NBA season. I know that. But I think to regather, come back, they should have some type of a mini camp, if not exhibition games, and then ramp up for almost a full playoffs. I mean, again, it's not your typical season, but as it relates just to the playoffs and crowning a champion, I don't think it's going to wind up being all that different than what we've typically seen.
I don't think so. I don't think so at all. I don't think so at all.
If something happens and we get to a point where players are contracting the virus and they have to sit out and the league and the playoffs just continue to go on, well, I could see then maybe people having a gripe. But on its face value, I don't get it. And I don't know what Chuck and Shaq are talking about, trying to say just shut it down. I don't agree with that whatsoever. If the NBA does return and they have essentially an entire playoffs, that's going to be a champion. I mean, I'm always going to view that team as a champion. No asterisk next to it, and it's not going to change the way I view whichever team or players on that team are able to get it done in these crazy times. We got it done today for you. We'll try to do the same thing tomorrow. The Ultimate's up next. My man Matt Rave is on tonight, 6 to 8, 21-hour break right here on the Monsters of the Midday.
OG&E and the Sports Animal.